Happy New Year, everyone. Hope you're enjoying the holidays. We have something special in store for today's episode. Due to popular demand, we'll be uploading the audio recordings from our last FutureWork 21 Summit, which brought together the world's top HR influencers, experts, and practitioners who discussed the future of work in 2021 and beyond. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Also, if you're not already registered for our next summit, on January 26th, make sure you click the link in the description to claim your free spot so you don't miss out. Until then, sit back, relax, and enjoy. Or if you're like me, listen during your next workout. So in the next session, we're going to be talking about how to build culture remotely and reimagine the employee experience. I'm joined by Sanyun Sang, who's a professor, author, LinkedIn influencer, and number one executive coach in the world, as recognized by Thinkers 50. Sanyun advises coaches, CEOs, and board advisors on the new requirements of leading in an uncertain, ambiguous world. Also joined by Adrian Gostick, global expert on organizational culture, New York Times bestselling author, and co-founder of The Culture Works. Stéphane Charbonnier, Chief HR Officer at L'Oreal USA, who has 25 years managing large-scale changes and helping organizations achieve business growth. And then last, but certainly not least, my friend Chester Elton, Executive Coach, LinkedIn Influencer, best-selling author and co-founder of CultureWorks, who spent the last two decades helping clients engage their employees in organizational strategy, vision, and values. Welcome, everyone. How are you all?
Great to be here.
We're great.
Always that moment where it's like, who talks first? Exactly. Will I be the one that says that? But it's nice to see you all again. For those that aren't aware, Stéphane was actually episode one of the HR Leaders podcast. My first took my job and was like, am I going to start a company and do this? And Stéphane was the only CHRO nice enough to say yes. to come on the podcast. So thank you, Stéphane. It's been 4 years since we last spoke. So truly a pleasure. Similar with Sanyun. Thank you so much. And Chester and Adrian, I couldn't think of a better group to bring together. So thank you first and foremost. That being said, Stéphane, I'm going to pick on you first with the question. How do you build a company culture that is built for, you know, an increasingly remote world that we find ourselves living in right now?
Thank you, Chris, for having me and for having all of us. Pleasure to be here. That's the million-dollar question, Chris. And when you asked me that question, I gave some thoughts, and I see actually three key elements or core components to answering that question. The first one is around how do we provide for employees and people in general in an organization clarity. Because if you don't have clarity in terms of, you know, whatever your strategy is, your values are, what is the ethics components of the organization, it's extremely important. Then there are, you know, two other conditions that comes for me hand in hand is trust. But with trust comes accountability. So you cannot build a remote culture within your organization if you don't have that trust and accountability that comes together. Because that's the end, as we know, of course, with the pandemic, people, you know, are not together anymore. You can't micromanage. You can't be walking around and checking what people are doing. So you need that trust, which is the new currency. But how to overcome and balance as well sometimes that fear of losing control is that accountability. So that's for me the first big piece. The second piece that I would say, and we've all experienced that, by the way, including recently, Sanya and I were supposed to be on an event, and unfortunately, technology got in the way. So for me, the second big piece to build successfully, a remote culture is technology. Technology to make sure it's very seamless, and you know, as we all experience in our personal life, whether it's, you know, you want to buy something online, you need to have that consumer grade digital platform in the workplace as well, because it's making it very difficult. And technology for me becomes an enabler and something that will augment our ability to provide transparency to our employees, but also to some key stakeholders. And last but not least for me is how does the organization provide support internally? In terms of mentoring, because you know we need to be available, we need to provide avenue and conduits for people to express themselves, feels like they have a voice, and remain connected. So I'm going to kick it off this way, and I'm sure we'll have something to say on that. But that's where I wanted to start, Grace.
Fantastic. I'll let everyone else jump in then.
Yeah, I'll jump in really quick. I think one of the things that Stefan said, the word that really captures, I think, remote culture is that word fear. And we've got to be aware of that, that people are fearful right now. They're fearful for their jobs. They're fearful that their kids aren't getting a good education. They're fearful for the health of aged parents or whatever. And I think when you talk about that technology and particularly that support, that becomes really key. Stefan mentioned another thing, that the employees have a voice. I think that becomes really important. I think as we work more and more remotely, we have this fear that we'll be forgotten. You know, we're not seeing each other in the hallways. We're not seeing a meeting and be able to just step in and say, hey, can I help? So Adrian and I have been doing a lot of research around. So what do leaders do to kind of tamp down that fear and ramp up support? And I think two things are really important is that you really have to up communication. You've got to be, you know, if you think you're over communicating, it's probably about right. You know, even when the communication is there's nothing to communicate. I think that's important because in a communication void, we fill that with fear, rumor, and innuendo. And none of that is productive. The other is, and you would expect this from me, Chris, and I'm just delighted to see that carrot on your shelf, is you have to up gratitude. You know, you've got to look for those small wins and reaffirm to people that, yes, their voice is heard, that what they did was important. And you recognize that and you celebrate it. Even the small wins, the little things that reassures people that their voice is heard, that they matter. So I think Stefan is spot on with the technology and support. I would just add to that, up your communication and make sure people know that they're valued and appreciated.
I love to build on that. So what you said earlier, number one thing is there's a sense of contextual clarity, right? Because in a moment of disruption like what we're facing now, we still need to, as Chester said, communicate. And what we need to communicate is clarity around what are our values? What do we stand for? Still, what are the anchors, foundational anchors from which we can pivot from? And then what you said about trust and transparency, those are two words I've been thinking a lot quite a bit, because the traditional definition of trust is a willingness to be vulnerable in the face of uncertainty. And when there's that willingness to be vulnerable in the face of uncertainty, research has also shown when we are the first to be vulnerable, it actually creates that sense for others, a willingness, permission for others to be vulnerable. And so when you talk about fear and control, our desire to control in the face of fear, that willingness to, that as leaders and managers, we have to be the first to show that vulnerability in the face of uncertainty in order to build trust. On transparency, you know, transparency we think about as trying to just show everything. But in a world where the fog of war isn't about not having enough data, but the fog of war is actually too much data, it's very easy to be not transparent when you just say, lay all the data on the ground. It actually requires an understanding. And it goes back to understanding of our people and what's relevant to them so that we can give them the information and parse it out that can connect them more deeply with us. And then when you seek more information, then be able to share that. But I would say one mistake people make when they think transparent is share everything. It's actually easier to hide when you share everything. But if you focus on the other person, it's like they won't care what you know till they know that you care. So you demonstrate that vulnerability and care first and get to know your people.
Yeah, I would add to what Sanyin's saying. It's brilliant. And I think everything that's been said, I've been taking notes as well. I think from what Stefan said about clarity and technology and support, you know, Chester adding in the idea of gratitude, and then what Sanyin's saying about anchors and vulnerability, all of those are terrific. What I might add, too, from what we're seeing with our clients, as Chester and I work with a lot of organizations, a couple of maybe counterintuitive things that we're seeing in some of the best. The first is that people development is actually going up. in some of the organizations. And I know a lot of the HR professionals out there, in many cases, they've slashed training budgets. You're not doing much in people development because we're all just trying to hang on right now. But many of the great organizations we're working with, they're not maybe spending a lot on it, but they're doing a lot to help their people develop each other. They're doing actually more right now because maybe people have a little bit more time than they're not commuting, et cetera. So they're being a little counterintuitive in that way. And the other thing too, is that coming back to what Stefan said about listening to people's voices, some of the great organizations that we're working with obviously are looking for new ways to do business. One of our clients is Texas Roadhouse here in the U.S., 60,000 employees. They actually are the number one rated restaurant throughout the entire pandemic. And they actually were back in the black in 4 weeks. When we talked to their CEO, and we were actually on their leadership calls every day during the first of the pandemic, what they were saying is, our CEO, Kid Taylor, told us, look, he says, when bad things happen like this, you got to talk to your crazies, those radicals within your organization, because they're going to have ideas. He says, your rule followers, they're puppies on the porch. They don't know what to do. So he says, you've got to give voice, but you got to give voice to people perhaps that you weren't listening to before.
Adrian, that is such a great point. And I can second what you're saying about people development in my coaching clients, the great leaders, and also major companies that are innovating. They are investing in people development because people are the most powerful assets in our organization. And this idea of giving voice to individuals, I would say it's also in times of disruption like this, the rules or the systems are traditionally designed to help us only see certain things. But during periods of disruption like this, what my clients are seeing, what we're seeing is an ability to now see other things that we may not have valued before, but they have a tremendous value. For example, people who mentor others, right. People who are the I call them the catalysts, you know, who are the skeptics or ask questions that take that stepwise leap. People who are the emotional glue for the company. We never promote people because they're the emotional glue or they are the hope generators. But now we're seeing their value, even though the system didn't have a way of valuing them before.
I love what you're saying there, Sanyan. I think too, you know, in the great cultures, not only are they investing in people, they're much more forgiving.
Yes.
You know, I one of my favorite quotes, a very famous American philosopher, Mike Tyson, who said that all the strategy goes out the window as soon as somebody punches you in the face. and you know, we've been punched in the face with COVID. And everything has gone upside down. And so the good leaders are forgiving those mentors. You know, one of the case studies that we and I love it. I know you have a can. It's WD-40. I'm sorry, I don't have a L'Oreal product, Stefan. But
I haven't got this one, Tesla.
Yeah, there you go. The typing.
The soul-sucking CEO, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and Gary Ridge in the last recession, it's exactly what Adrian said. He doubled down on people development. And I love WD-40. By the way, it stands for Water Displacement 40th Formula. And so in their culture, they say, we don't make mistakes. We have learning moments. It's a very forgiving culture. If you're going to be innovative, if you're going to, you know, if you don't get the technology right stuff at the beginning, let's improve the technology. If our communication isn't quite right, let's be forgiving of each other, knowing that there's a lot going on outside the view of this camera, and we need to be sensitive to that. You know, Adrian's really great in his executive coaching. He tells executives, look, when you talk to your people, ask questions, you know, really practical, like, how are you doing today? Because today is maybe better or worse than yesterday. You know, how can I help? I love the servant leader. And then, Stefan, to what you were saying about giving people voice is, what do you think? I think it's such a powerful question for people that are working remotely. Here's the situation. What do you think? And I think that's very empowering.
on that note, on that front, we have during the pandemic, you know, we've probably one of the earliest organization in New York City that returned to the office, and we've faced a lot of controversy internally and externally for doing that. And you know, Sanyin, you were saying it's very important to understand what you stand for as an organization, and we had that discussion internally. And what we stand for as an organization and part of our culture is to be together, to collaborate, to innovate. Of course, put aside our industry, when you know, when you're in the beauty business, part of the beauty experience is, of course, experiencing and you know, a texture, a fragrance, and it's hard for me to do that virtually with you unless we're together. So we've you know, decided and defined that there are some moments where we need to be together. So we came back very slowly, very gradually across the world. In the U.S., as an example, we've reopened mid-June, and we're any week we're between 25% and 30% of our people here. So we're doing that very safely, and we've invested actually a lot to make sure that our employee safety comes first. But extremely important for us to define what we were standing for in terms of the organization, and in the context of the various crises we had this year, right? It's hard to pick one, but we were talking about listening those employees. We put together some listening circles when Black Lives Matter movement hit, of course, in the U.S. And we, in the span of maybe 10 days, the entire executive committee would listen. Over 3,000 employees, Black employees the first week and employee of color the second week. The impact, not only the deep insight, obviously, we gained from all of those employees, but also the impact and the ripple effect it had in the organization were massive. And obviously, we've turned those voices in now enablers that help us and help the organization in terms of what we need to do. When we return to the office, as an example, we have internal think tank. One of them is a parent society. So we consulted with them in saying, hey, in the face of the pandemic, schools are closed. What do you think we should do? And they co-created with us that return to the office, workplace flexibility, and he was communicating at the end of August, and I can tell you, it was obviously extremely well received. So to your point, Chester, I think now harnessing those voices and weaving them in the way we operate is something that I believe the crisis will have taught us, and this will stay.
On that point then, Sanyin, how do we avoid that culture retreat and not go back to the same behaviors that we practiced before this?
Gosh, Chris, one of the things is what we see, there's the positional power of those in leadership positions, right? So one is understanding what we stand for, as Stefan had so beautifully laid out with L'Oreal. But I think there's this idea of leveraging our positional power. Because one of the biggest mistakes I see, biggest blind spots for those who are authentic and really great leaders, is they think when I show up, I'm just showing up as me. But they forget they also have the CEO title or the CEO title. And when you have that, when you show up as that, that's another lever. So you're not speaking as just Stefan, you're speaking as the, you know, chief HR, chief people officer for L'Oreal, and that has weight. And so how do we leverage our weight to help see things and reinforce the habits we want to continue to inculcate in our organizations? So let's take the case of L'Oreal. One of the things I heard and what you said there, Stefan, is the idea of belonging, shared experiences, right? Shared experiences. And belonging is really, I define belonging as that state of feeling where you feel your membership is valid, recognized, and embraced. And that comes from that shared experience. So as you're looking through, now you know what you stand for, you and others in the C-suite, as you're looking, what are the examples and the innovations that reinforce that sense of belonging? And it could be, say, employees doing something innovative on the virtual front, saying, all right, we may not be able to be in the same room together. But the senses, all right, why don't we all like spray this perfume? We're smelling the same perfume. And hey, let's meet in Paris next week, okay? And we all have the same virtual background. Paris. Why not, right? And then when you see that, you're like, oh, that's creating a shared experience that reinforces the sense of belonging. Hey, let's bring that, recognize that. Because when your people see what is recognized, guess what? They would tend to do more of that, you know? And when people say, you know, Chester and Adrian's work is around gratitude. When you say, thank you for doing that, the moment you as the leader in positional power says that, people are going to do more of that. And so that those are ways that we can, one, seeing things that reinforce our culture, even in, if they may be done in innovative and untraditional ways, and then double down on those by reinforcing and highlighting and rewarding those. So that's my key thing.
Couldn't agree more. I heard an expression the other day. I wish I remembered who said it. I would give them accreditation. It wasn't Mike Tyson. I know that. And that is that leadership is contagious. It is contagious. And I love what you said about how you show up as a leader. Yes, I show up as Chester. If I'm also the CEO, that's a big deal. And the way you act as a leader gives everyone else permission to act the same way. And I think leaders need to realize that look, if you show up and you're in a bad mood and you're the type of leader that until you get to that fifth cup of coffee, nobody's going to talk to you, that gives everybody else permission to show up in a bad mood. If you're the leader that shows up and is forgiving and is grateful and gives that appreciation, that goes viral. It is absolutely contagious. So thank you for that, Sunyan. I thought that was very important.
And I might add, too, on the sort of the big question that Chris asked is around the cultural idea here. And HR really are the keepers of the culture. They should be, even though everyone owns culture. One of the things we're noticing is, as Chester and I go out and work with clients, or mostly it's now virtual, is that if the pandemic did one thing, it exposed the gaps in our cultures. If we were bad in our team or organization at accountability, something that Stefan talked about, we're probably doubly bad now. If we were bad at communication, probably again, doubly so. So the question is, are we keeping track of this? Because I think your question was great, Chris. How do we make sure that those things we are noticing really are noticed, really are attended to, and then when things hopefully get back to normal next year, we all hope, that we don't lose those. So that's really where this is, in that idea of inculcating the changes that we're starting to see, so that we really are an organization of accountability, communication, et cetera. So I'm really curious, maybe Stefan, you know, what are you doing at L'Oreal to really inculcate some of the things maybe you are seeing right now that will continue on?
Yeah. So some of the thing, Adrian, that we've tried to promote and push, and I think Sanyan, you mentioned that earlier, is the idea of experimenting, and that we have a culture typically of excellence. You know, how do you balance your need for perfection with the need to be effective? So we gave permission, and we give permission to managers and leaders to make mistakes, fail fast, be authentic, and own that. That's the notion of accountability I mentioned at the beginning, and move on. And by the way, we're not expecting you to know everything and you know, do that on your own. You need to leverage what you know your team can do to help you around. So that notion of experiment and experimentation is key in what we do. But I'd like to go back on what I think Chester was mentioning around leadership, and what that crisis has done is certainly. We've seen the best and the worst, and that's what crises do in general, right? When it comes to leadership. So how do you make sure that you hold again and put some of the people that might not have had the leadership, the visible leadership that was the most effective, endearing, empathetic on the, at the forefront right now, and yet support the people that needs to be supported in a different way. And that's where we are right now. And it's, I can tell you some will make it, some will not, because it's a different world where you need to accept that, you know, there are plenty of unknown in, you know, on the radar that you need to be flexible and cope with that.
Yeah, and I think, can we riff on that a little bit? Because yeah,
my next question, Sanya, was actually going to ask you, what are some of the leadership competencies do you think just required? You know, we've had a crash course in crisis management as leaders through this, and I'd be interested to hear what everyone's thoughts are around what are the competencies required to lead during these times.
So one thing that the pandemic has done is it has actually accelerated every trend that we were on before. Because we are in a VUCA world, VUCA meaning volatile, uncertain, chaotic, ambiguous. And in such a world, we've already alluded to some of those ideas, leaders, those in leadership positions, how to sustain success, how to prevail is to control the why. Here's why, what we stand for. Here's what we're going after. You know, that's a clarity of contextual clarity. But then you distribute the how. You empower the how. And that's the experimentation Stefan was talking about. And in that world, one of the trends that was accelerated is this idea that as leaders, show up as a human being first. People don't follow positions or titles. People follow human beings. So, and in during COVID, there's no work life. My kids are in the next room. There's just life. And we're seeing more, a fuller sense of people. And so there's an expectation that leaders have to show up and be vulnerable, strategically vulnerable, to be able to connect with their people, to say, you know what, if I'm scared, I know you're scared, but here's how I believe we can move forward together, because I'm not going to have the answers by myself. The answers in we, not me. But on the technology front, I think we've been talking about the downsides of technology, but I want to talk about some of the upsides as it relates to this question. So what Chester said and what Chester and Adrian said about showing up, how you show up, guess what? Technology, I have a mirror to how I show up in meetings now. I didn't know that my thinking face is an angry face. And now I'm like, oh, I don't know what I think. I have to like be conscious about smiling. Otherwise, no wonder people think I'm, you know, they might think I'm a little bit upset, you know, when I'm just processing and thinking, right? So we have that mirror, and that is such a gift, because when you're a leader, your expressions aren't your own anymore.
I just want to point out, I was the only one that showed up in a tie.
Anyone else in the comment section wearing a tie? Let us know.
You know, I do want to make a point, though, and I love what Sunyan's saying, and particularly about showing up and being vulnerable. One of the things the pandemic did is it was the great leveler, right? Everybody got hit by the pandemic. It wasn't just the line workers or just the exam. It was everybody. And so everybody gets that the commute, you know, if you're working remotely, is opening the door, right? Like my commute is now a nanosecond. And, you know, Adrian and I have had a lot of fun with the executives we coach to say, look, the way you show up at work is so important. The way you show up when you walk through the door to your family is just as important. You know, and simple little things. I love Chris was coaching us up before the session, said, what are some of the practical things that people can do? And one of the things we love to coach executives is say, when you walk through the door, don't leave your best self at work. Take your best self through that door. And when you see your spouse or your partner or your family, here's a little tip. Be happy to see them. You know what I mean? Like, just say, hey, great to see you. You know, I'm going to turn off my phone and my laptop for 5 minutes. Let's go play Lego. You know, let's go experiment with some L'Oreal products and just smear them all over, you know, and just be happy to see your family. I think, you know, that genuine, that authenticity, it needs to come with you through the door, because I forget who it was that said it, whether it was Stefan or Sonia. You know, there is no work life. There's just life. And work is there, and life is there, and we need to celebrate that. Absolutely.
I think that, you know, being genuine, authentic. I love you, Chester, your piece of advice. I remember that tonight when I walk back home. I think the ability to manage your energy is incredibly important because, you know, and I used to be a marathon runner, and it's all about managing and your energy when you go through those 26.2 miles. And I think right now we don't know, you know, what's the new normal, because I don't think this is partly the new normal, but we haven't seen it completely yet. Therefore, you need to be able to give, but to be able to give, you need also to resource and make sure that you find that energy and you manage that energy. So it's that's the piece where I would say, for me as a leader, you need to be mindful of how do you get your own energy and how do you decide to focus on some things versus some others. So you need to be clear on that.
I would add to that. I think it's a great idea about the marathon running, Stefan, because when we run, when runners run, they're not thinking about the 26.2-mile race. They're thinking about the next point on the horizon. And as we get into crisis, to keep our own energy levels up, we've got to do that. But we've also got to teach our people that we're no longer thinking about these huge, big, audacious goals. We're thinking about what we're going to get done this week. What are we going to get done today? We've got to bring things into much more controllable focus for ourselves and our people if we want to keep our energy levels high.
I'd love to talk about data. When we talk about culture, we talk about employee experience, you know, a lot of people see it as kind of soft. Whereas in actual fact, I think this is probably, as we said in the last session, this is kind of the hard edge now that many organizations are focusing on. Stefan, within your organization, how have you used data to reimagine the employee experience in the business?
So it's very interesting for me, data, when it comes to employee experience. You know, we think about the world of human resources or people, very fuzzy, but actually it's for me a mix of art and science, and both go hand in hand. And for me, the science is about the data. And the truth is we have more and more data available to us today. So to Sanyan's earlier point, it's not about big data. It's about smart data in my mind. What are the relevant data that you will need to collect timely, and the way you use them to either, you know, provide insights to your employees, your leaders, make them smarter. But all in all, for me, the data available, it's about choices. And provided choices and flexibility for a personalized solution in the workplace that's going to fit me. We've done some experiments in the past few years at L'Oréal where we provided options for people to choose in terms of their ways of working. Do you want every Friday afternoon off? Or do you want every other Friday off? Do you rather buy vacation or have money? Do you rather spend your allowance on helping that charity? And you see that people's engagement is directly connected to the choices that you offer them. So for me, that's how I see the use of data going forward in the workplace in terms of a very strong employee engagement lever.
You know, one of the things that Adrian and I have spent a lot of time on, and I love what you're saying, Stefan, is there's big data and then there's small data and then there's custom data, right? There's the data for that specific employee. I love what you say, you know, how is it that you want to make a donation or spend your time? You know, we spend a lot of time on identifying people's key motivators. And once you understand those key motivators, it really does help you put them in a position to succeed, to marry what they do with their passions. You know, we often tell a cute story between Adrian and I. When we first wrote our first business book, we were working for a bigger company. And I went to our CEO and said, hey, we should celebrate Adrian. He's the writer. By the way, make no mistake about it. When you see Gostick and Elton in our books, Gostick is the writer. He is the writer.
I notice you cover my name up a lot when you hold it up. So.
Yes. Let me do it. Yes. Our book here, Chester Elton. What was so hilarious, though, is I said we should celebrate Adrian's brilliant writing. And we've got a big conference coming up and he'll meet all these people and we'll have all these people he's never seen and we'll have the chicken dinner and it'll be fun. And I said, by the way, he doesn't wear a watch. So let's give him a really cool watch because, you know, he clearly needs a watch. Well, you know, I didn't know Adrian very well. And obviously what I did as a leader is I projected all the things that I love. I love events. I love meeting people. I love watches. And when we presented Adrian with the watch and I got to know him later, he still has that watch in mint condition in the box. The reason he doesn't wear a watch is he hates watches, right? You know, and he would rather have been home with his family. You know, to your point, Stefan, it would have been better for him to say, Adrian, here's a cool new project headed up. That's where he'd like to spend his time. So I think with the pandemic and Sonia, you're saying the new normal, you know, the progress forward is let's really get to know each other. Let's really figure out how we can do this. And we've got the data tools. There are assessments. There's time. There's simple questions that lead us forward. I hate it when people say the good old days, when life was so much more simple. And I go, yeah, you know, when people died of smallpox and the birth rate was 50%, you know, and we all died of influenza. Yeah, the good old days. No, we're in this amazing new time of technology and what we can do with the data and engage people. And when we bring that down to what you've said, Stefan, so brilliantly, and Sonia, we become vulnerable. We get to know each other. We move forward. The world is a really engaging and wonderful place. And that's my sermon, and I'm going to shut up.
You know, and that was so brilliant, Chester. Thank you for those insights. I think on the data point, one of the critical pieces of data, because now if we take the assumption to be true that investment in people development, because people are the most powerful assets in our organization, is the way to go, then one of the critical pieces of data to get is understanding how they receive data and how they learn. And it goes back to something that was said earlier, in a crisis, and actually also not in a crisis, you can't over-communicate. And what do we mean by that? Is it the same thing over and over and over again? No, it's actually looking at, I think about it as content ubiquity, but it's not medium centric, it's actually medium agnostic. And that's the beauty of technology, right? So if you have someone, and by the way, I look at parenting as an act of leadership. So I'm gonna draw my kids, you know, rather than my clients as the case studies. My three children learn very differently. One is very text-based. Another one is highly visual. And my son, I notice he's moving around all the time as he's listening to his teachers. He's very kinetic. So if we understand that's how people receive that information, the visual person, you can say, or the visual person, you can say the same thing over and over and over again. But if you show them, here's a visual of what we mean, boom, they're going to soak that in a lot more effectively. The audio person, it's that way. And also my students just shared with me 500 words is too long to read. I was like, okay, and still fighting that, say, okay, we'll share information in 500 words, but we're also going to share it in slide shares or in quotables. And so I think that connects the idea of getting the data for engagement, but that's a critical piece of data to get. How do they receive data?
Yeah. And I think another element that I'm seeing companies doing really well now is customizing that communication. Mm-hmm. I think when we started out, it was like bombarding everyone with the same information that wasn't personalized to me. What does that mean for Chris? What does that mean for my circumstances? And especially while, you know, if you're a global business, the narrative across different countries is completely different. So why are you kind of sending everyone the same information? So I'm seeing companies do a lot of amazing work around customizing the communication to every single employee, which is a big change. And a lot of work is going into that. But I've got friends and even my wife, actually, she's bombarded with all of these communications, 80, 90% of which is not even relevant to her from her business. And therefore, she doesn't look at it all because it's just more and more effort. So I think as businesses, we need to do a better job of that, of communicating that with our employees as well.
And it really is on the manager's shoulders, I'm afraid. We need more to do, right, as a manager. And it's HR to train them to do this. We met a wonderful manager recently who worked at Fluke, which is an industrial measurement company. And she was terrific at this. She said, look, my people are all salespeople. They're all spread around. They don't have time. They're not even looking at all the stuff HR is sending them. So she says, I've become the filter. I have to filter this stuff. And I will send them on. I'll say, here's a quick little paragraph about what this is. But they know if it's coming from me, they got to pay attention to it. And she says, I also keep track of these things, so I'll remind them of them in our weekly calls. And if it's something that's 911, I'll call a meeting at the end of the day to do this. Now, it's not genius that her system, it's genius that she's actually doing it, because she realizes the biggest frustration for people who are remote, or salespeople, or who are working remotely, is a lack of communication.
And that's a big challenge, isn't it? Like, even our employees that work in, you know, supply chain or manufacturing, how do you keep them connected? How do you keep, when they're walking, you know, the shop floor of a production facility, they're not looking at their email, they're not looking at their email or the intranet, you know, so you have to have a way. And again, an example, a company recently, the CHRO launched their own radio station. And for 2 hours every day, they broadcast a live radio in the factories across, I think there's like 60,000 employees, and they look, and those factory workers look forward. That's how they get their update. You know, it's a radio station of that company, a 2-hour live stream from the CEO and the CHRO, and they update them, and they got it on the mobile, they got it throughout the factories. So you kind of, I've seen very innovative ways of doing this. It doesn't cost a lot either to do these things. These are not, you know, hugely expensive activities to be able to do that. You can't rely on everyone looking at an email or logging into an online internet portal. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I think the key to communication is two words, is variety. You know, as Sunyan was saying, you know, some of are audible and some are more visual and some are more textual. And the other is brevity. You know, I love when I get an email and it's very meticulous and it's about 3 pages long and I go, I'll read that later, which means never. You know, if it's not in the first 4 lines, I'm not going to get it. The world is ADD. So variety and brevity, I think, are really key. And the radio station, genius.
Oh, I was just wanted to highlight a point that Adrian made, because when the manager is filtering through all that data, it actually surfaces a key aspect of leadership that has for too long been ignored. It's what we call contextual leadership. So two of my colleagues, chair professors at Duke University, Sim Sikkin and Ellen Lind, they came up with the 6 domains of leadership model. And there's 6 domains in a triangle, but the foundational domains are personal leadership, relational leadership, and the last is contextual leadership. In the leadership narrative up to now, we've all heard about, well, you have to have vision, you have to have skin in the game. That's really about projecting who you are. That's credibility. That's the effect. The idea of getting to know your followers, getting to understand what they care about, because we know they're giving up a lot to be able to follow you. You have to think about their best interests. The effect of that is trust, and that's relational leadership. But the thing that is never really talked about is this idea of contextual leadership, which is filtering through to say, these are our priorities. This is what we stand for. And the effect of contextual leadership is actually a sense of community. Because when you have that clarity of objectives, clarity of what we stand for, clarity of focus, then it's a lot easier for your people to connect together. So that is a piece of leadership that is more critical than ever, but not talked about often enough.
I'm interested to know as well, Stefan, from your point of view, we're seeing this big shift from employer choice to employee choice. But it's also a huge shift in mindset. So I'm wondering how you're instilling this in your leaders. It's a very big shift from employer choice to employee choice.
Yeah, you know, it's very, that, you know, it's back to the conversation we were having around engagement. How do you sort of shift the paradigm in terms of, hey, I'm going to be, and I think Chester, you mentioned it, and I love that, philosophy around servant leadership. For me, it's reversing the roles and what can I do to help you to be more effective, to be, to bring your whole self to work so that you feel you belong. So for me, that's the role of the leader. And that's where, you know, again, that's a big shift, a shift that requires vulnerability, that requires willingness to eventually give up some of those principles that helped you up to now. But that will help you being seen a caring leader that wants to develop their own team. So it's a journey, to be honest. And some are more natural than others. The role of the organization is to allow the sharing, the mentoring, the support, so that people can feel that's okay to be at a different stage, because you have the early adopters that got it. They know it's very important for them. If they want to retain their talents, they have to shift themselves. So they've done it. And those are, you know, any type of change, you will have them. For the other, it's difficult. And one of the key, so we talked about trust as being maybe one of the biggest fear factor in our organization for leaders to make the shift. The second piece is more of a capability building, is around feedback. How do I create a culture of feedback where it's okay in a very simple way, yet effective, to give you, Chris, feedback on how things are going, but also to receive feedback. And for me, that trust and that culture of feedback will be the key to unlock, in my mind, that mindset of, you know, becoming a servant leader to help people's development.
You know, I want to jump in on that, Stefan. I think that is so critical in how you give feedback and how you receive feedback. So how do you create that safe place, right? How do you show up as a leader, not the leader that just says, hey, here's everything you're doing wrong. Like, I'm going to show up, and every time I show up, trust me, I know what's right, and you're doing it wrong. And the reason is I'm the leader and you're not is because I'm right and you're wrong. And this is a very common dynamic. I want to give you a really practical tip for everybody that's listening. And Adrian, we've told this story a million times. Is Carlos Aguilera, this manager of Avis Budget Rental Cars in Dallas, Texas. And here's how he created a safe feedback and feed receiving system. He puts 10 pennies in his left pocket every day. That sounds bizarre, but here's what he does. He sets a goal to have 10 positive interactions with his people every day. And the way he keeps track is he moves a penny from his left pocket to his right pocket. The way that plays out in feedback and feedback being received is when he shows up to whatever facility, they're happy to see him. He's looking for the small wins, and he can't always be there. He's calling people. He's texting people. He's writing handwritten notes. He's calling people out in team meetings so that when he has to give the tough feedback, his people are open to it because his brand is... I'm here to reinforce what you're doing right. And when something goes wrong, we'll work on it together. Does that make sense? Does that resonate with you, Sanjeev?
And what I loved with Carlos, too, is we saw him taking people aside and correcting them. But as you say, he led with positivity so that his people were much more open to this. It's interesting, as we're doing a lot, we've been interviewing tons of sort of, you know, Gen Z and millennials coming into the workforce as we're working on a new book about anxiety at work. And one of the things we're finding is that feedback is so important to this group that if we as leaders do not provide feedback to our younger employees, especially, they will keep trying to do things in a different way until they get that feedback. So we as leaders are thinking, oh, this is good. They just keep doing what you're doing. I feel like, if you're not hearing anything negative, then just keep doing what you're doing. That's not how many of these young people we're talking to are perceiving their lives. They think that if they don't hear any feedback, I need to just keep doing something different until I hear something positive. And it's incredibly counterproductive to what we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, and I think something we often forget, and I see this both in students and also in the leaders that I work with, is we forget that the ultimate goal of feedback is to empower the other person. And we rush to give constructive negative feedback. And we think, oh, they must know absolutely what they're doing right. But if it's about empowering the other person, wouldn't it be important to also let them know what they should be replicating and doubling down on, and not just what they should be, what they should stop doing? Yeah, there was something earlier in what you said, Stefan, that we'd like to go back to. And then, of course, I lost my train of thought. I'll come back to it.
Well, just really quick, I want to piggyback what Sanjeev said about, we're very quick to give negative feedback and very slow to give positive feedback. You know, one of the biggest things that happens when we teach about gratitude is to say, well, I would give more gratitude if I had more time. And we always say, okay, you haven't got time to look for the good things and to reinforce the good behavior. When something goes wrong, how much time you got now? You know, I'm on that in a New York minute. So we need to, as leaders, reverse that thinking and start with the positive. What's going right? Let's build on that and then get to the negative.
I remembered. So Stefan, you actually have a competitive advantage. when it comes to the employee experience. And that is because you're a company that really listens to your customers and really knows how to engage with your customers, but across, you know, social media, in person, across the makeup counters and so forth. And nowadays, one of the big shifts that Chris talked about, the shift from employer choice to employee choice, is the shift to basically treating our employees like they're our customers, because every employee now has a megaphone. And I did a survey earlier to say, what's your best way of understanding what the culture of a company is about? Is it their mission statement? Is it what their leader writes about? And the one that got the highest percentage points was what the other employees say. And so your employees are treat them like your customers, and you have that advantage.
Yeah. The amount of times managers go, they really think that of me? I've had managers in my team who have to go through it. Like, really, Chris? That's what they said about me? They have no idea as well. Sorry, go for it, Stefan.
No, I was going to say that's very right, Tanya. And you know, it's about being employee centric, the same way we're consumer centric, and you start from there. But I want to maybe build on what Chester you mentioned about creating that culture of feedback requires safety. And safety requires, trust and practice, because you can tell me, I can be open with you and give you feedback, but until I experienced it and I feel it for myself, I need to. So it's very, and we see that, in creating that culture of openness, feedback, and safety, people are going to try and see how is the organization reacting to that, and also how is the individual. So I think it's extremely important in those moments that people feel supported in whatever feedback we have.
I think now more than ever as well, that we're remote, people want even more feedback. Right. Yeah. What you see people just working themselves crazy because they want to be recognized and they don't have any feedback now. Those sort of day-to-day interactions you have or with their leaders and their managers, they're not there anymore. So their way of responding to that is just to keep working. Until it actually takes. We've seen a lot of people, it's having impacts on their mental health now because there's not that communication there as well.
Yeah, and I think Stefan, what you say is so important. The leader needs to model that. As a leader get feedback, don't get defensive. One of the great pieces of advice my father gave me is he says, you have to choose to be offended. And that to me, that's just such great leadership advice. Take in the information. Choose not to be offended. Choose to be open to that feedback. And as we talked about before, that's contagious. If I see you as a leader taking that feedback and implementing and not being offended, then that's the way I'm going to act as well.
Before I wrap up, if there's a parting kind of takeaway, we went through a lot. We covered a lot in the last hour as well for everyone. If there's kind of one thing that you want people to take away from this, it could be something simple they can implement or just, something for them to think about more. What would that be? I'll start with yourself, Stefan.
I think that if there's one piece, and I would go back to what Simon was saying at the beginning, for me, that is critical right now as we are reinventing the culture and reimagining the employee experience, is authenticity. Being Simon, you mentioned it, vulnerable, authentic, transparent. That's for me the engagement factor in any organization going forward.
Yes, I loved what Stefan said earlier about you need to take care of yourself. And Sanya, I'm talking about being authentic, and Adrian, the practical things that you talk about. I think in being authentic and taking care of yourself, I've developed this little mantra that I'd love to share. As soon as my feet hit the ground in the morning, I tell myself three things and I try to repeat it through the day. And it's be kind. I think as leaders, we need to remember, be kind. Second, be grateful. We can focus on all the things we don't have. Forget that. Think of all the wonderful things we do have and how we're going to move forward. And then thirdly, be of service. Look to serve people. I think when we are serving people, we are less in ourselves and caught up in ourselves. And so I would love to share that mantra with the listeners. Just be kind, be grateful, and be of service.
Yeah, I heard from a great leader a couple of weeks ago now, and she's doing, every Friday afternoon, they're doing what they call a wine and wine party. So they're gathering together their team, and it's been a hard week. Every week is a hard week, right? And so they grab their favorite beverage, could be alcoholic or none, and they sit, and for an hour, they just complain about everything that's going on, those clients, those other, and at the end, they let it go. And so by Monday morning, they come in ready to be recharged. We've got to give ourselves time to just mentally support each other, that vulnerability that Sanyin's been talking about so powerfully today. Give ourselves time to just, you know, vent and then start over every week, fresh and new, and get it out of your system. So, you know, take this home, you know, and be positive when you get to home too. So leave it at work. You know, do something mentally when you walk into the next room, or if you're driving home, you know, just let it go and start every week anew.
Don't drink too much wine, Sanya.
Exactly.
I think one of the key takeaways from our conversation and time together, and Chris, thank you, because like the host is so often, you cast the light on all of us, but I want to like shine the light.
You make my job easy.
For being the curator and the convener and for your thoughts and questions. But one of the key takeaways, I think, is this idea of really knowing your people. And part of knowing them is really seeing them. So if you come with the assumption everyone is contributing, not if they're contributing, everyone is contributing, you will see what you're seeking to find. And you will see their contributions and highlight them. And that doesn't happen only in the, that's not just for the workplace. It's also for the home, for your partner, for your children. See their contributions and see their value. In ways that we may not have been open to before. And when we do that, that allows that psychological safety. Because when they know you see them, they know when you see them, they matter. And when they matter, there's that sense of belonging and security, and they're more willing to take risks to experiment. And that's what we're in a moment where we have to celebrate that experimental, innovative spirit, because that's what's going to move us forward and to reimagining the future via the employee experience.